Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 63 of the Beaker Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emelson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host and senior Star Destroyer architect, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we are going to be talking about the things that we think might maybe speculate showing up in patch 9.1, which the PTR, we incorrectly stated the PTR is going to be up this week. That would be because we both misread the announcement, and the announcement actually said it's coming out next week. So next week is going to be really busy for us because PTR. But also that means that our show topic for today got a little bit confused at the very last minute.
Yes.
So today's episode is going to be on our speculation about the patch 9.1 that we incorrectly stated last week that the PTR for 9.1 was going to be out this week. It is out next week.
Like a week off. Or just a week off.
We were within 1 week.
Exactly.
Of the correct date. But that means that our planned episode for today, which was going to be on the 9.1 PTR, cannot be on the 9.1 PTR.
It's slightly difficult to do that type of episode, I would say. So.
Yeah. We could just post the episode a week late.
That's an option, but we still have to record this one, right? So, like, we could record our speculation and then actually do it. That's weird. That'd be weird. We need, like, a time travel device. It would be difficult. I'm working on one, but not done yet, so.
Yeah. Is it going to go there on the table next to your Star Destroyer?
Yeah, well, it's this, and then I have a model DeLorean somewhere back here that will sort of mesh together. Yeah, it'll be real cool. It'll be real cool.
Nice. So, yeah. Nice.
But awesome. Yeah, so that was supposed to be the episode. I think we both screwed that one up, but
yep, I guess we both misread that patch date.
Yes. But at least I think, yeah, we'll do some speculation tonight. I'm actually probably going to take notes as we do this. So that way we can sort of like
see
how we did. Yeah. See what we did next week. So,
but yeah, I think on the speculation episode we will probably ever have.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think first up we have basically last week's sort of news, things that happened. Yep. So not too much here. This will probably be a pretty quick one, but, we basically have sort of first up, we have Preach put out a video, sort of just going over sort of his thoughts about World of Warcraft, like the open world, like some of the problems it has.
So the video is actually on the catch-up systems.
Yeah.
But he goes on this really extended and detailed discussion of the problems with their open world design.
Mm-hmm.
Because as part of doing the catch-up for a new character, you have to go and do the campaign, and you got to do stuff out in the world to catch up the character. And he had some really insightful comments on it. I have not been a fan of the way that the open world content in WoW works for a while, like really, really unbelievably bad for a while. Mm-hmm. It is better now than it was 3 years ago, but it still can't hold a candle to Classic. And that's saying something, because Classic is how the game was 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think his comment, right, was the whole, like, it seems like their open world content is meant to be done while you're doing something else, right? Whether that's, like, watching Netflix or, you know, just have it on, like, your second monitor and you're sort of going through the motions, right? And I think it's funny. I feel like this has been like this for a while.
Yeah.
And it's honestly been like this, I feel like, since MOP. Which is a weird way to put it, because I think MOP was the first, and they did this previously, but MOP was the first big expansion where you had a very tight, it's almost like that was the expansion, they knew how that expansion was going to end as they started it. So they knew essentially all the steps you would take through that expansion was very, very sort of sort of detailed and sort of, you know, written for you before they even started. I think every other expansion since then has been very similar in terms of like the story content and like that sort of content. Like maybe raids and systems change, right? But the generally the story is sort of written at the start and sort of they've taken it from start to finish.
Really, you don't think Cataclysm is like that? Because Cataclysm, like the opening cinematic for that is Deathwing, and then you finish it by killing Deathwing.
But Cataclysm, I think Cataclysm suffered from the fact that they did not have a coherent continent of where you stayed, right? So like Cataclysm thing was not only was Cataclysm changing the world and they had new zones right there, but the whole world changed. There's a bunch of quest stuff they did everywhere, and then you had sort of disparate zones where you did things. So it still felt like you weren't on rails yet. Like MOP felt on rails. Like you didn't get out of Jade Forest until you completed the story, and then you went to, you know, whatever the next zone was, a Valley of the Four Winds, or like whatever the Wilds place was to the south of that.
Yeah.
And every other expansion since then has been like that. So you sort of just like follow the markers, right? And like there's, you know, there's no longer that idea where like you stumble into quests like you did in BC and Classic, right? And maybe you got one breadcrumb quest that sent you to the next quest hub, but like if you missed that breadcrumb quest, you were just sort of wandering around until you found some, you know, little exclamation points on your map, and then you found something to do, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I actually just ran my druid in Classic from South Shore to the Badlands because I ran out of stuff to do. I had breadcrumb in the Badlands, so I'm like, well, got nothing better to do.
For the next 2 hours?
So, I mean, it's not that far.
No, no.
Also, I'm a druid, so jump.
That's true.
But it's, and so there's like different pieces. I think that's a good point, like about it being on rail. Like you don't have to think about where you're going. And I think that's a really big part of it as well. Like the whole reason they actually took away flying mounts is so that we would have to think about navigation, and then we don't really have to think about navigation anyway.
No, it's more of an inconvenience than an actual like, oh, I need to figure out how to get from here to there. It's more of just like they put a fucking mountain in the middle of this quest and I have to figure out a way to run around it or to run up it, you know what I mean? So it's not, I don't know, it's, yeah, to me it's these zone, like I think I've talked about this before in other contexts too, like in like the way raiding works and some of the other systems work, it's all in the service of like a coherent story, which is cool, but there was something I think better about the fact that some of these things were just disjointed. Where you had a random quest to do some random, like, take this note to this other person, and then that person will give you a note, and you will take it back, and that's it. Like, that's the quest. Like, there's nothing, like, you don't get anything from it. You get some experience, you get maybe a little bit of gold, but, like, the idea is you just had to walk from A to B and then walk back. And, like, Preach's point here, too, is, like, every quest is filling a bar. Like, it's either you're killing a bunch of mobs, like, you're killing mobs or clicking things. Or you're just clicking things.
Doing both in approximately the right amount for a fill the bar quest.
Yeah. And it's funny because I used to make fun of these quests. Like we used to talk about the fact that like, oh, this is just another kill quest where like the drop rate's going to be terrible and you'll kill 700 boars to get your 12 meat and you're going to move on. And it's like, those used to be like the onesie twosie ones that were annoying. And now that's literally every quest, which is like,
yeah, I hate the fill the bar quests.
It's just, it's so weird lazy. But it's just so weird that that has become the norm. And like, I don't know. There's like, it's maybe back then, like we were like, I don't know. Maybe it was different because we hadn't seen some of this stuff and now they've like done it. Like, I remember the first time I did the BC quest at the start of Hellfire where you like ride the thing to bomb the ziggurats, right? Like that was mind blowing to me because no other quest was like that, but you really can't have that experience again. But like, there's very few like, I feel like vehicle quests like that. Those are world quests now, which I find.
Most of them actually are like campaign quests that then turn into world quests once you finish the campaign.
That's true. Yeah.
But there's also the element of like, he commented on the elites that you fight during the campaign quest. And there's just a lot of like random elite mobs that you run into that don't actually do very much. They don't do an elite mob's level of damage. They just have an elite mob's level of health, and they're just like big things to turret down. And like, there's there's really just not on any axis something very engaging here. Like, you really have to be pretty far undergeared, even by casual standards, to have a risk of dying.
Like, yeah.
I have a warrior that I've been leveling, and that's going to hit Shadowlands at about eye level 50, and that's fairly low. So the first like level where I'm getting to catch up gear is going to be kind of spooky. And then after that, it's going to be totally fine. I'm not going to have to worry about dying ever again. And it's not like I'm like some insane player or something. It's just really hard to die. And you don't have to think about navigation. You don't have to think about what you need to do to complete the quest, because all the quests, not all the quests, but a lot of the quests are just fill the bar or go to the marked location and wait for someone to show up or talk to someone there, do something there. There's just like, I don't know. It's very strange going back to Classic, and you have to be afraid of dying because anything could kill you. Like, totally, totally real. Anything could kill you.
Yeah.
You have to think about how to get places. Sometimes it does take time to get there, which is a downside. But yeah. I don't know if it's really a downside that is worth complaining about. I think it's better. And you have to think about how you're going to actually complete the quest. Like, you get a bunch of quests, and then you get this thing where you think about, okay, I have a quest that asks me to kill skeletons, and one that asks me to kill spiders, and one that asks me to kill Worgen, and one that asks me to collect doodads off the ground. And these are like not all in the same location, but these two are close by. And then if I go from there over to here, then that's where the Worgen are, and like that kind of thing, right? You don't really do that anymore, because you get like the two campaign quests that you need to do. They're right on top of each other.
And there's always a secondary quest you can, you don't have to progress the campaign, but if you pick it up, then it's literally in the area you're doing the campaign quest anyway. So why don't you do that too?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I get that. Yeah. I think that's, if that would be one suggestion I make for, like, I think you're right. The leveling experience in general is like they fail you forward, right? Like, they just don't let you fail. Like, you, it's very much an LFR mentality in leveling, which I think removing the danger of dying is fine, but I think the fact that you are on rails along with not having the ability to die, right? Or not like being put, like having yourself put in danger as you're leveling is a bad combination, right? Like, you can't have both of those things.
I think it is made worse by that, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think eliminating the danger of dying is a good thing. I remember like when I leveled my hunter in Cataclysm, Hunter is like one of the safest classes to level. Yeah. It's pretty hard to die. But in the Hinterlands, do you remember that Ziggurat in the Hinterlands?
I do, yes.
Going through that quest chain on my Hunter, I died several times. That hard. It's always just like there were several other people there. They would be respawns right on top of me. My pet would already be low. And like that kind of thing happens. And like, to some degree, having stuff respawn on top of you and like kill you is kind of annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, it was playing the game, right? It was like, what do I do if stuff respawns on top of me? Oh, look, something did respawn on top of me. Let me use a freezing trap so that I don't die to it. And then I can heal my pet and kill it once I've dealt with what I'm currently fighting.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's just, I'm, like I said earlier, it's a, at least now you get to think about your rotation because you don't literally two-shot things like you did a couple years ago. That's about it.
Yeah, no, it's funny. All my best memories leveling are generally from when either I've screwed up or my friends have screwed up leveling together. My best memories from leveling in Shadowlands are, number one, there was a pet that dropped early on in Bastion that if you used would crash you out of the game and wouldn't let you back in.
Yes.
So that was the one big memory.
You're telling me about that.
And the other memory, all my other memories around sort of leveling or just playing the game early on are in Perdition's Hold. Like, and that elite area, because we would die over and over again. Like, and it's weird to me that they've sort of gone away from that in terms of like the actual experience and serve. I mean, I guess they've done it in service of two things, right? Number one, generally speaking, leveling in MMOs is never like, it's just not a good thing. Like leveling to get to when the game starts is always annoying. Like, and maybe MMOs don't follow that mold, but like, I know in like Diablo 3, so I'm playing that right now, like leveling is just annoying to get to 70 when the game actually starts, you know, in other yeah. games, like having to unlock things is just, it sucks, right?
I think that that is a flaw of WoW, and to a degree a flaw of WoW's community. The yeah. like focus on the end game to the exclusion of all other things, because it does have ramifications like this, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And that's part of what has been fun about going back and playing Classic, is like the end game is not the whole game, right? Like yeah. there is gameplay throughout the game. It's like, I don't go into Dragon Age Origins expecting like to power level all of my characters. I don't even know what the level cap is in that game. Like, is it is there a level cap in that game?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Just like I don't expect to go in and like power level the cap and then play the game.
Yeah.
You know, I expect to level up while doing it. That's part of the RPG experience that Ian was so like
that's true.
Into. For Shadowlands. Like, if they want to bring back the RPG experience, make leveling engaging. Make the open world content engaging. Like, make it so that stuff can kill you and you have to think about how you do things.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be like every mob's an elite, because that's like kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
But when my like not even like 180 characters just don't give a shit about mobs in the world, I think that's a point where it's really a problem.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. That's for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I think that's all. Yeah, I think those are all good points. His video was very not eye opening, but like, I know it was on the catch up system. It seems like the catch up system is at least from certain aspects good, other aspects not so good. But I think his comment on, yeah, you're right. The comment on just the general, like, you just put something else on and do this like type thing is a bit telling.
Yeah.
It's almost like they've turned WoW into like a seasonal game where like you have like the leveling and then the first like 4 weeks of it, and like once LFR is fully out, that's like the end of the season. Then you have this lull in the middle before the next PTR cycle and like season two starts, right? But
man,
and, yeah.
I hate how accurate that is.
I think, yeah, it's, who was I was talking to somebody about, I forget, I was talking to somebody about this, but yeah, it's very much that sort of idea of like, you sign up for the season, you play until, you know, LFR ends, and then kill the last boss in LFR, and then boom, you take a break and go do something else.
When I was a lowly heroic raider, that is actually kind of how we engaged with it, you know?
Yeah.
Patch starts, everybody's on, everybody's doing everything, and then, you know, we clear the raid on heroic, which does not take even if you're not a mythic raider, it doesn't take that long to clear the raid on heroic for a lot of people. And then at that point, you know, it would get down to like a core of like 8 to 10 of us that would still play pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely seasonal. Like a new patch would come out and we get a bunch of people that would come back and play the game and then take a break again. And like, yeah. I actually do think that is how a lot of people engage with World of Warcraft. Like, they're not sticking around for the whole, like, what, 16 weeks or whatever it took.
Yeah, whatever it ends up being. Yeah, whatever it ends up being. No, that's for sure. Which kind of, I'm wondering if the devs see that and that influences their design decisions. I hope not. But yeah, I can definitely, you can tell it somewhat does in terms of like the leveling experience.
As metrics driven as they have seemed to be, I actually think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, probably, unfortunately. Oh man! Right. Any other topics on the preach stuff? Or you want to move to the next one?
I think that cool. about covers what I had to say on it.
Awesome! All right. Well, next up is the Blizzard announced a new MDI event called the Great Push of all
what
things.
Do you think of the name?
Oh my god! So the best meme coming out of it was like a Nagura. Somebody posted a video like. It's some like Nagura making some face like she's pooping and just like right next to it's like the Great Push and it's like her side by side with like the logo for it. It's a I mean, whatever. Like, the names, you know, they had to have known this was going to happen. You don't name this without, like, the poop jokes coming. Come on. But yeah, so it's a new MDI format tournament, sort of a one-off thing that they're doing, which essentially it's like literally Blizzard's going to give you keys to do, and you try and do the highest level key of that, you know, whatever the dungeon and affix combination is, which is cool. Like, this is what they probably should be doing versus having time trials every 4 weeks, would be like changing the format. Like, I could see them doing like, I could see this being something that maybe they push forward with, which is like experimenting with just new formats in MDI. Cause like time trials with time trials, I think it's a tired and true thing. You can do your, you know, your seasonal, you know, time trials, and then like your BlizzCon thing. Right. But I think stuff like this is fun. So it'll be interesting to see how this works, because like, this is one of those ideas where like, you're seeing people do like the highest level keys they can. And I think that is fun to see what they figure out. Like, how do they cheese certain mechanics? What mechanics become one shots at a certain key level, and then how do they get around that?
It's really interesting because like, there's a lot of stuff that mattered in high keys in BFA that never got fixed because it never showed up in the MDI, because like in an 18 or a 20, it was totally fine. But when you hit, you know, 28, suddenly Captain Krog is like one-shotting through plate armor.
Yeah. So it'll be fun. Like, this is where, you know, I think the MDI traditionally, their time trials format sort of highlights just interesting routing and pulling strategies and things like that, right? I think there's somewhat there, but I think this coming up is going to be, we'll probably see more interesting uses of classes. Like, what classes are brought where, why are they brought, you know, what certain abilities negate things, so.
Possible highlight. This is, so traditionally, or I don't know if I should say traditionally, in BFA, Brewmaster was actually a lot better in high keys than it was in the time trial kind of environment. I don't know if that is still true.
Yeah.
But it definitely, I think, like, Prot Warrior, Bear, and Brewmaster all, like, have advantages over Vengeance Demon Hunter in those higher keys, where just, like, can you live through this is a more serious question.
Yeah. So yeah, it'll be cool. I'm really, really excited. I think the format's essentially, their signups are till the 17th of May. Then you have Proving Grounds, which is basically to try and do the highest key that you can. And then I think it's 8 or 6 teams qualify based on like the highest difficulty key you've done.
Yeah.
And then those 6 teams compete in like a, I guess it's like a round robin or some sort of tournament, right? That following weekend over 3 days. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is cool. And I think this is actually like changing the format. I think you're exactly right, is what they need to do, because the time trials format is very one note. Like, it's been solved. Like, the way to do it is you pick the things that let you do the biggest pulls, and you do the biggest pulls, and you kill the things before they kill you.
Exactly. And that's
the whole strategy.
Yeah, we talked about that side of it. But yeah, I mean, this will be fun to see what, like, even too, if they, I mean, hopefully they do this, maybe they do this. I bet you they don't, because I don't think they have like the manpower to pull this together. But it would be interesting to see them do side-by-side comparisons of like, oh, like an 18 time trial, like MDI run of this dungeon went, and like, here's how the 25 or 28 or whatever key level they do goes, right? To kind of highlight the differences in terms of like why MDI is just different, right? But we'll see.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it would be very interesting as well, like, you know, while they're changing up the format, you know, maybe in the future we get something where the key level you do on Proving Grounds determines the key level that you compete at, you know? Like, maybe they take, like, if you can, you know, they take your highest key level that you did on the Proving Grounds and they use that to put you in a bracket. And then that bracket, you know, is like 3 key levels lower than what you did. So it's like, you're still going to more reliably complete the key during the competition. But it's, you know, instead of it being everybody doing 18s and 20s, it's going to be like the like gold bracket that's doing like 28s, and then the silver bracket that's doing like 25s or 24s, and then the bronze bracket that's doing like 20s. And then that, you know, then each of those different brackets is like different, you know, because the bronze one is going to be a lot more like the existing MDI, And the gold one might be a lot more like this great push. God, what a name.
They went there.
The guy that named that had to have also named Charmed Passions.
Like, they had to know. So no, but this will be fun. This is so it's the end of May. So it's May 28th, 29th, and 30th. Is the final stuff. Then Proving Grounds the weekend before that.
Is the week before. Yeah.
Cool. Oh, shout out to them doing Proving Grounds on a weekend too, for like people who actually have jobs and want to actually compete in this. So cool. So next up, real quick, 9.1 was pushed to their vendor CDN, which, for people who don't know what a CDN is, it's a content delivery network. It's essentially a way for you to download patches quicker because they put it on servers closer to you. So 9.1 was pushed to that earlier this week. You know, all, you know, everything points to next week being
PTR. 9.1 PTR.
Yeah. 9.1 PTR, sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that's pretty much next week. Next Tuesday, I think we should see something Tuesday, Wednesday time frame. PTR should go up, and then we'll have fun. So I'm not really going to spend a lot of time there. Next up, a couple more things, just a handful new things. WoWhead has been following a writer. I should have pulled up the guy's name or gentleman's name.
Wyatt Troll.
Thank you. Who has been basically mapping out WoW races as Dungeons and Dragons or D&D 5e rule set races and classes and things like that, I believe, too. So, really cool if you want to read into it. I mean, if you're into D&D, the only reason I put this on here is that we mentioned Peak of Serenity. If you're a Patreon, there is a D&D campaign out there you can sign up for and have some fun with other Patreons.
I don't know how Babs feels about using these in those campaigns.
Yeah, we won't.
I have a feeling that he would be open to the subject.
Yeah, but I would wait till they flesh out everything. I think he's still posting. Like, I saw the undead one was this week. I think last week was troll, maybe. So he's still sort of, the writer is still sort of fleshing these out. But if you're interested in D&D, you know, there's, you know, somebody's putting together 5e rule sets for all the races, which I think is pretty cool. So that was just sort of a quick little World of Warcraft thing to touch on. Two other quick things. Well, it depends. I'm also saying, you let me know if you want to cover these. Well, we're going to cover at least the first one. You can let me know on the second one. First one is basically Omar Gonzalez, who, if you don't know this gentleman, he was a Blizzard server engineer. Essentially, he was the individual that built the original classic server. So he essentially built the way the modern WoW server could read and translate the classic data set into something, and basically gave Blizzard something working in his spare time that gave them enough confidence to then push forward and launch Classic as it is today. So, you know, Omar is leaving. He is heading to Mike Morhaime's studio. Dream Haven?
Dream. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's heading over to hang out with Mike. Of course, Mike Morhaime, former CEO of Blizzard, founder and CEO, I believe. Omar's leaving.
I'm getting really curious now.
About Dreamhaven, yeah. They've got a lot of ex-Blizzard guys there. So
yeah. They have not just a lot of ex-Blizzard guys, but like, okay, so Mr. Gonzalez here was just working on Classic, right? Like, server engineer for Classic. And I don't know, I'm really curious because this isn't like he's a server engineer for Overwatch or a server engineer for Diablo. Like, just there's overlap in the different skill sets, to be sure, but his expertise has been in working on the World of Warcraft servers. And mm-hmm. So maybe it's just they picked up someone that's a solid engineer. That's definitely a possibility. But the fact that they were just working on the classic servers has me really, really interested in what is going on over at Dreamhaven.
I don't think it's an MMO, man. Like, so I would say that it's
a long shot, right? Because the last
so much money, dude,
that I know of was Final Fantasy 14, and that is only because Square Enix is behind it.
Well, and so they shut down that too and rebuilt it from the ground up, right? Like, they shut down that game for what was it, like a month or two? And
it was actually live all the way up until the new version launched.
But they stopped dev on that
parallel to it,
yeah,
and then they shut down the old servers. But I mean,
Square's got it, and then the only other new one, there's one coming out of the Amazon one, right? New World or New Haven or something like that.
I have not even done that, actually.
And then Riot is, of course, making one of League of Legends fame. But I think to make an MMO today, like you need an existing IP that will pull people across. I think this Amazon one, New Haven or New World or whatever it's called, is not going to be good. I'll be flat out.
It's such a generic name. On the subject of MMOs that have succeeded, I think the only other one that like succeeded in the kind of modern era is Guild Wars 2.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that SWTOR did, though, too.
No. And if it started with a subscription model and went to a free-to-play model, it failed.
Oh, fair enough.
That's my line. Like, it can find a new life as a free-to-play game, and SWTOR absolutely has. And I haven't played it since it launched. I've heard good things about the story content, but I haven't wanted to, like, pick it up and try playing it, because I've heard it's also very grindy if you don't pay anything.
Yes.
But one of these days I might, like, you know, put a, you know, $20 into it or something, the kind of thing that I would buy a game on sale on Steam for, and like treat it like a KOTOR game, because it actually did have very good story content at launch. Guild Wars 2, I would say largely succeeded, kind of on the downhill trend now, but like it's a very short list. There's a lot of other MMOs that launched that didn't make it very far.
No. I played a lot of those. Yeah, for sure. Too. For sure. But yeah, I don't actually think, I mean, if Dreamhaven comes out the gate with an MMO, that's a bit ambitious. I think I think you need another IP. Like, I think World of Warcraft was like a right time, right place thing, but I also think that they were helped by having all the Warcraft lore to push them forward.
But like they really had the Warcraft 3 lore push them forward, and I honestly don't know how much they even needed that. I think honestly the biggest strength of it is that it basically cannibalized EverQuest, because it was EverQuest but more approachable, and less grindy, and looked good, like genuinely looked good even on really crappy hardware. Like, you could have a dumpster to your computer and it would look better than EverQuest.
So it'll be interesting to see what they have, but they ganked, or Dreamhaven pulled out Omar over to their rank. So Blizzard loses another, sounds like a good one. So I bet you some of the classic our kids are not too happy with that one, but we'll see.
One more thing. There is a Diablo 2 resurrected technical alpha that just started. Hey, Enum, do you want to guess what I got this week?
Did you get Diablo 2 resurrected technical alpha?
I did not get a beta.
Oh, well, I get vaccinated on Monday. Woo! That sucks. I don't know if you've watched any streams of this though. Game looks good.
Yeah.
So
I've heard good things. I don't know anybody actually that has the beta, but
I think one person in my guild got it. But
got you.
I have zero desire to play this game. Just heads up, it just looks really good. I'm not a Diablo 2 fanatic. I have zero. I'm
interested in playing it just because of the history, like
that's fair.
Like its role in the genre and in gaming in general. I'm interested for that, and basically no other reason.
I mean, I can't.
These ARPG games, though. Did you see the Path of Exile 2 stuff from this week?
I caught the trailer. I did not watch anything other than the trailer, so I know nothing about it other than that 2 or 3 minute trailer that they posted.
Yeah.
The quick one.
So some people in Guild were talking about it, and apparently they're basically going to be re-releasing Path of Exile with a new engine and a bunch of new story content. And that's Path of Exile 2.
Yeah. So literally it's like an engine rewrite. Yeah, I heard that. It's an engine rewrite and one more act. What I pulled from it. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, to be fair, like,
there's how that's going to, like, when that is going to release in relation to Diablo 4.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. They've already said that they've been very, very very sort of vocal that it's like a 2022 thing, I think. So, but we'll see when those two come together. I think they're two very different games. I think they're both ARPGs, but I think like Diablo ends up being the light, like the jump in, jump out seasonal thing, where PoE still has seasons, but PoE is like very much, much more deep with a bunch of different systems that sort of interact with each other. So, but yeah.
Every time I've tried to start playing PoE, I've always like bounced off of it because I just don't have the time to invest in that. Although these days you can very easily like go up and pull up a build. They just like starter builds for every season.
I will tell you, it's funny. The one thing, just I know we're on a tangent here on PoE, but if you do want to get into it, my thing with it, and I think I don't know if you watch Ko Carnage, he's a Twitch streamer, but he gives a really good overview of like PoE. And basically he's like, look, PoE has been around for years. There are millions of systems that interact in millions of different ways. Like, do not expect going into your first season learning everything. So he's like, basically pick a starter build and just play the game. And like when something you hit something you don't understand, learn just that thing. If that's all you learn that season, that's been a good season. Cause like there's like delving and harvest and like this jail thing, and then there's like breakouts and there's mapping and there's like all these different systems. And he's like, his take was basically like, look, you're not going to learn everything even in your first season, so like just maybe learn one thing, right, and go from there. So it's a fun game though. It's a good game. Alrighty, I think that about does it for our
Brings us to the discussion of the only beta I am going to be getting next week.
Heck yeah, PTR beta.
PTR.
Nice, I'm excited. So I think this episode we sort of kind of threw together, we'll say. And what we wanted to do is basically just take a look at like what are some of the things that are coming out, what are our predictions of maybe what we'll see in the patch based on our extensive knowledge, speaking with Blizzard employees and the other betas and alphas that we've both participated in together. So I think the first up is sort of break this out into a couple different sections, and we're of course going to change the juiciest section for last. Hopefully I don't crash in between then and now.
Love talking about Mistweavers, you know.
I am, right? It's going to be great. So I think first of all, I wanted to at least touch on the new zone. So we are of course getting a new zone, I think attached to the mall, right? Near the mall. And so what I wanted to sort of just a couple of predictions about what we'll see here. So the first thing that I thought of was around Anima being a new zone. And I know that Anima has sort of fueled most of our Covenant pieces, but do you think we'll get like more Anima sources? Meaning like we'll now start to, instead of getting like a paltry like 100, 200 a world quest, we're going to see something like 500, 600, like basically that, you know, 2x boost or something like that.
I actually think we will across the board, like across the entire game, see more Anima income. Like it's just going to be a feature of the patch. You know, we dealt with Denathrius siphoning off some of the Anima. Yep. And it's going to go up, you know, by an amount. And then there will be a 9.1.5 that basically takes place after the defeat of whatever is in, like, Sylvanas, whatever's the last boss of the raid. Yeah. And it'll again. Like, and I think that is the only way the anima costs on the cosmetics ever make sense.
That's true.
That's the only way. Like, yeah. I don't know how anybody could drag themselves through so many world quests otherwise.
It's rough. I have literally stopped. Yeah, there's grinding, and then there's like the current costs for items of anima, and it's just unattainable.
Yeah. And then you like, do you think we're gonna get a new currency? Like, I mean, we know Stygia is not gonna have use in 9.1. Do you think we're gonna get a new Stygia?
Yeah. We'll get a new currency from that zone. Like new rep, new currency, I think is almost a given.
The jailer thing for 9.1 in the new zone.
They repurpose it?
Like basically it's gonna be like not literally Eye of the Jailer because it's a new zone, but like basically Eye of the Jailer, so it time limits the amount of time you're there.
No.
I think you're right, and I really hope you're right.
And the only reason I say that is, and Blizzard's done this before, but we fight the Eye of the Jailer in the raid. So my assumption is canonically we kill it so that it's no longer there to watch us.
Is there gonna be something else? Like maybe there's maybe the Eye of the Jailer.
I don't think they'll do another one of those things, because I think the idea is that the mall becomes less scary now versus when we first got there. That was their whole point.
It's a failure that nobody liked, but
it's just so dumb. I think it was just because, like, I have a tangential comment on that, which I'll bring up at the end about like when Blizzard doesn't know how to do things, they do some stupid stuff. So,
Speaking of Stygia, I spent this week doing the Stygia farm because I felt really bad about not having done basically any of it during Prague.
Like, yeah,
I just unlocked the ability to buy sockets, and I bought my first socket this week. And you want to know how much damage I got from putting that socket in?
32 DPS.
Oh, you high rolling. 15.
15. Okay, I doubled up. I thought it'd be up there. That's crazy. I can put a
socket in every single one, and it's worth less DPS than like half a potion.
It's so dumb. So
it's and some of it's like tank things, but some of it's like I did that. I put in all the work to get my socket this week, and I saw the sim after I put the socket on something, and I was like, I did all of that for this.
For this, yeah.
That like, is you. Because of the Eye of the Jailer, this is how it relates. Because of the Eye of the Jailer, what you do is you go and you complete all of your dailies except for one thing. You leave one thing undone because you get a massive increase in your Eye of the Jailer when you complete the requirements for the quest. So you complete all of them but one. You go and do other things. You kill rares, that kind of stuff. To get to max Eye of the Jailer, you go and you knock out that last one thing and turn in the quest. And you still get the Stygia from that at the end. It like doubles your Stygia income.
Interesting. Yeah, I never did that. I just did the dailies every day for like 4 months.
Yeah. So I did that because I was like so far behind.
That's fair. That's fair.
But I did that and I got my socket and I was like, so I kind of want to do the rest. Like I could be in a month, I could have 6 sockets and like I'm not replacing these pieces. I have best in slot in several slots. Like I'm not replacing them.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps that several slots are BOEs because it like the crit verse ones, but I think new currency, I do not expect to see another Eye of the Jailer mechanic.
No. We don't know anything about the zone, but do you think the zone will just be unlocked at the start? Or do you think there'll be different areas of it, like Beast Warden's Perdition's Hold was?
I think there'll be different areas. We've actually seen that pretty repeatedly. Argus was like that. Argus had different zones. Yep. You could get to Perdition Hold. You couldn't open the. I don't think you could open the gate.
You could go in, but there was like a stacking dot. That was Beast Warrens that you would get some sort of dot on you that would kill you. Yeah, Perdition's Hold. I don't think you could open the gate. I think it was locked. Yeah, to you.
Like Argus, you couldn't even go to the other ones. Like you could see them on the map, but there was just no way to get there. And then. What Nazhatar mostly opened up the day that you got it, but there was new stuff that opened up a little bit over time
as you got rep with certain things, or you did certain quests. I think it was quest based.
The two were I think linked, but I think we've seen that enough times that I'm pretty confident, you know,
more progression while I'm watching Netflix Demon Slayer. By the way, a little anime. I think progression, so it's like more anima hopefully is the key, new rep, new currency to farm, new areas unlocked, no Eye of the Jailer type mechanic. Anything else you think about this new zone? Like
did you mention on stream or before the stream that you're taking notes and we're going to check our
answers. I think I said this before. Yeah, I am taking notes. That's why I'm like recounting in my head as I write this down so that I know
how accurate we are.
Yeah. So anything else you think about this section is particularly for the zone itself, but
So I'm actually kind of excited just because this zone, from what I understand from the stuff we saw at BlizzCon, is going to feature the Ethereals, or the Shadowlands version of the Ethereals, which are basically just high-res Ethereals, fairly prominently, and I just think they're super cool, and I'm kind of excited by that.
Nice. So anything with the Ethereals, like, do you think we'll get... Because I know we get the new... We'll talk about the new Mega Dungeon in a bit, but, like, do... Do we get any weird things with them? Like, well, they'll
get some ethereal themed transmog.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, we are super, super, super getting a toilet paper transmog.
Nice, nice, nice. So toilet paper transmog. Okay, okay. I'm trying to think if there's anything else about the zone that I care about. I don't really. I wonder. So I'm going to throw something out there that maybe it doesn't hit, but I wonder if there are hints. So this kind of goes to the secrets, but if there are hints on this new landmass that there are other similar, like there are other landmasses in the ether that is the unknown area between the Bastion and things. Like, I wonder if this is like, while they're pulling this huge landmass in, like there's a section of it or a piece of it that's like somewhat familiar to us that we're like, oh, we've seen this before from like some other place. That's what I think is going to happen. I think there's going to be something where it's like there's a portion of this landmass.
It's Redux.
I'm sorry?
9.2 is just going to be Argus, but again.
Well, maybe not specifically Argus, but like some other, like maybe it's like the Emerald Dream, right? Like there's some sort of mixture of that, right? From like a Shadowlands perspective. So I think there's definitely going to be some sort of secret around like a portion of the landmass looks familiar, is familiar to like another area we visited or something like that. So yeah, that's my out there sort of prediction.
Okay. Number one wish, like this is the thing that you want to see specifically related to the new zone. What is the biggest thing you want to see?
What is
like it could be a system. It could be a thing in the zone.
Flight points in the zone. Some sort of travel network in the zone. That's what I want.
Okay. We're getting flying in the rest of the Shadowlands next patch, right?
And we're getting mounting in the mall, which I assume extends to this area. But I want a flight network.
I want to see little collectible things that are scattered throughout the zone.
Okay.
You can mall, and it gives you flying in the zone.
Okay.
That's what I want to see. That if they did that, like that'd be great.
Flying by collectibles. Okay.
That's for reference. That is how Final Fantasy 14 does their flying unlocks. You do it per zone, which on occasion is very annoying when you go back to an old zone and you realize you never finished it. You can't fly.
That's awesome. But
you do, like, you can get flying as early or as late as you want in an expansion, depending on when you want to go around and do it.
That's funny.
But okay. I very like that system. I like it a lot. And I would love to get introduced here because we're getting flying other places and it would just be like kind of cool.
Yeah. They can't let us fly there though. Maybe they could. Well, cool. Any other zone talk? Sorry.
No, I think that's it.
Okay. Yeah. The zone's going to be kind of more world quests to do. Super excited. All right, so next up is new raid. So for I actually went back and rewatched the BlizzCon unveil of this just because I forgot everything. So it's called the Sanctum of Domination. It is at the time was 10 bosses. They gave an overview of a couple of the bosses, right? So we see Terragru's Revenge. Terragru is of course the big thing that follows you around in Torghast that kills you if you die too much on the floor. There's Eye of the Jailer.
Last week on my warlock.
Really?
Took the thing that when you jump, it gives you like a super powerful jump.
Oh yes.
And then fucking jumped off the edge multiple times.
I do
boom.
I do that all the time. Was it the halls that have like all the platforms are like really thin and there's always edges everywhere?
Yes.
Yeah, it was that one. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. That one was always fun. But yeah, Terragru's there, Eye of the Jailer, Fate of the Damned, Kel'Thuzad, and Sylvanas as raid bosses. So my first piece is like, great, they're all there. Number one, is Sylvanas the last boss of the instance?
I don't think they said. Did they say?
Well, that was one of the prediction questions. I don't remember. So they did not say in the talks. I don't know if they said after the fact either.
I think she is the final boss. I don't think we're killing the jailer yet.
I would disagree. Okay. I think she may be the penultimate boss. I think the jailer is actually the final boss.
Yeah. Okay. I could see that. I just would have expected if we were going to fight the jailer at this point, I would have expected them to say, like, hey, so you're going to fight the jailer. Maybe they don't think we've gotten enough animosity for him yet, and we need to do the patch content before we have enough animosity to really get excited by killing the jailer.
So here's my lore nerd ways of how this is going to work, by the way. So the jailer, very much like Ner'zhul, when Ner'zhul inhabited the old helmet and turned Arthas mad, the jailer's doing the same thing to Anduin.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual final boss of this expansion is Anduin. So the idea is that we kill the jailer thinking everything is over, but with him dying, Anduin is now like ripped of, like he no longer has his chains controlling him, so that the rune blade he has just inhabits his body and makes him go crazy, and he becomes like some ultra powerful Lich King 2.0.
Oh, I actually think you might have called it. And the crux of it is basically, because they keep doing this, right? They keep having us do things that look good on the surface that have negative consequences that they don't tell us about.
And
they
don't
stop and say, hey, wait a second, what if we didn't kill this boss right here in this way?
Yep.
See off Queen Ajara.
It would be the second time they've done it in as many expansions. Even like, wasn't there one in Legion, was there?
Well, there's, so in WoD, there was Gul'dan at the end.
Yep.
In Legion, I would argue that the cinematic after Kil'jaeden is kind of that. It's not literally because we killed Kil'jaeden, it's because of Illidan. But
yeah,
that directly leading to Argus, which then directly leads to the Sword of Sargeras. Like, there's definitely, like, it's a little bit looser, to be sure, in Legion. I don't think there's anything as direct as, oops, we freed Nazoth.
Yeah, exactly.
in BFA. But, yeah, and I think that is the crux of it. Like, we're going to kill I'm sold now. We're going to kill the jailer. And in killing the jailer, we're going to free, like, there's no need for the chains anymore, right? Because the jailer is dead. So he will be free, which then frees Manduin to be the Lich King we all need him to be.
And then here it goes. I'm going to hate myself for saying this, but we don't kill Sylvanas. We essentially weaken her enough. And because we've just let Anduin go crazy, we need her help to break the spell. Sylvanas comes back. She's back in it, baby.
Or Sylvanas, we do kill her, but it's the Shadowlands. So now we get to work with her dead form.
I could see either going. God, no. There's so much here. But yeah, I think honestly, Jailer, final boss here, and I think Anduin becomes the actual final boss of the expansion. As weird as that sounds.
Yeah.
What do you think? So, question, Fate of the Damned. All I heard was the name. What do you think that's about?
It's going to be I'm calling it now a Reliquary of Souls style of fight.
Fate of the Damned is a Reliquary of Souls. Okay.
Where there's Reliquary of Souls are, that's the Burning Crusade one, right?
Yeah, that's the one with the faces, the three different faces.
One in Tomb of Sargeras, it's like that.
There is a similar one in Tomb, yes.
Yeah, it's going to be similar. That's
interesting. I had a different take on that one.
Okay.
I think that's the Arthas fight.
Oh.
See, I'm thinking like this is their, like, we're going to get everybody you need to know about in Shadowlands out now. Okay. And then, because KT's in here, man. Like, they gotta, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little off, but I think it's the Arthas fight.
So if you remember from Warcraft 3, the Necromancer cult thing is the Cult of the Damned. That actually would make a lot of sense.
I did not remember that. I'm just like, I'm just spitballing here. but yeah, I think that's the way this goes. I think Fate of the Damned is the Arthas one. You kill Kel'Thuzad again. Hopefully Kel'Thuzad's fight is similar to his Nax 40 fight. That'd be pretty cool if they do a similar sort of, like,
I'm sure there will be some callbacks.
Yeah, which would be cool. Sylvanas, not the final boss. She's probably penultimate, I would say. Jailer, final boss, and then Anduin. gets to be, he's no longer a little kid. So, then it'll be like every other final boss. We don't kill them. We just make them better. Garrosh, Gul'dan, Sargeras. I don't know. Whatever other ones.
We killed Argus.
Sardin Athreus.
Yeah.
So now we got our lore hour out.
Yeah. Is there going to be like a major intentional or not mechanical theme? Like Tomb of Sargeras had soaks. Castle Nathria had push timers.
Yeah. I was thinking about this and I would have said priority debuffs was another big thing in Castle Nathria, where like you had like Zymok, you had Stone Legion generals, even like impale targets on Sire were very similar, right?
That's mostly a healing mechanic.
Right. But it's been a very prevalent one in terms of like things like that. I don't know if there'll be a prevailing mechanic. I think so. Judging by the way that this expansion is going, right, just looking at all the fights, I think Blizzard's going more in the direction of maybe not soaks, but like some level of individual responsibility for like how you do something. Mm-hmm. So like a mechanic where like you as a player are targeted by something, you do something specific, and then your raid reacts the way you reacted. So yeah. Think of like portals on Zymok, Stone Legion generals, the big puddle thing, whatever they're called, the explosions.
Impale stuff to a degree also applies there.
Yeah, impale stuff with the things that it drops. So I think that's going to be a prevailing mechanic, even Anerva and her like geometry wars thing.
Yeah.
So I think we'll get more like mechanics that are dependent on you, like I don't know how to describe it, but it's like you doing something because you're targeted by it, and then your raid reacting to what you do.
Yeah.
Right. I hope to God we don't get any more Dark Recital. If we get another Dark Recital, I'm gonna freak out, dude.
No more dance mechanics. We went into council for farm yesterday, and I was not prepared for like Dark Recital was actually for the most part not an issue. People can do it. They can do it now. Our push timers were all over the goddamn place and a complete shit show. So we didn't quite kill it last night because like who even knows what the hell is supposed to happen when our DPS went up by this much since the last time we killed the boss. I think one thing that we may see in the new raid is a deliberate move away from spell queuing and push timers.
Okay.
Specifically because of Stone Legion Generals. And like Stone Legion Generals is a big buggy fight, but it's a big buggy fight that when they fix the bugs was still a shit fight.
Yeah.
It was really bad. There's this tier we have Zymox. We have to a degree Anerva, although Anerva is mostly benign. We have Council. We have Stone Legion Generals. We have a DPS stop on Denathrias. And it's like half the tier has push timer bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be cool if they actually did a fight like Anerva should have been, which is like a fight where you interact with something and can trigger certain things. That'd be cool. It's funny, like everybody harps on Stone Legion Generals. Anerva's a joke of a fight for where she's placed.
Oh yeah.
That could be a fourth boss you kill. Like if you think about it, you could do Huntsman, yeah, Hungering, and then go right to Anerva at this point. Because it's just a DPS race.
From the data, that's what people do because
really
fight.
Yeah. That's funny. But yeah, so I mean I would hope that the spell queuing, I would say that spell queuing ends up not being a thing they go away from. However,
I think it's going to be like a more deliberate effort to make sure that the spell queuing can't do anything really bullshit. Because the Nathrius has spell queuing, but it almost never shows up because the timers are actually very tightly tuned.
Yeah.
Like the only thing he can really queue is like there's maybe one. I actually can't think of a single instance of him queuing anything.
Yeah. At all.
It's always the same order.
Yeah.
Timers, yeah, so I think, but like that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, where it's like virtually impossible for it to matter, but you know, it still exists.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be, I feel like I'm there with you on at least the push timer thing, potentially more just global timers, right? Or sorry, not more global timers, less global timers and more like phase-based timers where things reset regardless of when you pushed, right? But we'll see. We'll see. Any other raid stuff that we talked about the lore, talked about some fights.
They mentioned the gear thing they are going to do for raid a little bit in the BlizzCon preview. What are your predictions for that? Are we getting Corruption 2.0?
Oh yeah, that interview. Such a tough one. I don't think we are getting Corruption again. I don't think the system that Ian described. So for those of you unaware, Ian, this wasn't actually in the announcement. This was an interview Ian gave, I think, with Forbes. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, basically essentially described like an empowerment system coming from the raid where like certain pieces of gear, there's like the ability for players to maybe empowered or there'll be an empowerment on your gear. Very much sounded like Corruption 2.0. Don't think we get this. I think it's not Corruption 2.0.
Okay.
I think it's
a lot loaded into that Corruption 2.0 term, to be fair.
Right. Right. I don't think it'll end up being like a risk reward type system. I don't think it'll end up being as extreme, like as exaggerated in the power it gives you either. I think it ends up being almost like like an empowered conduit type thing, right? Sure. Where like, I'm sorry,
sort of like legendaries where there's like instead of getting flash and poor gas, you like get a currency from raid that you can use to give legendary effects, not our current legendaries, but empowered conduit kind of effects to gear pieces.
I think that'll be the level of power that these end up being.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that they are a lot better than empowered conduits, because we only got one conduit worth empowering as a brewmaster.
Oh my god, it's so good.
Man, it would really suck for the whole system to just be dead in the water because the conduits all suck.
would be pretty bad. It would be pretty bad.
Do you think we're getting conduit rebalance?
What do you mean by rebalance?
We got Azerite trait rebalance. We got everybody that had like all a bunch of dead traits, like they all had one of the worst traits removed and a new one added that was typically extremely good.
Gotcha. I think we will get new conduit powers. I don't think we're going to get a rebound. Like, rebalance in the terms of like, I don't think they'll do the exact same thing of removing one and adding a new one. I think we'll get new ones.
Okay.
And they'll probably change the old ones, but not in a way that's like, I think it'll be like percentage changes or like potentially like a proc rate increase versus like, you know, now you no longer have this one and it's renamed this one, right? Like, I don't think they'll do something like that. So probably just new ones, to be fair.
I would actually be a little bit surprised if we did not see at least a few conduits just totally removed and replaced.
Okay.
It's specifically because Brewmaster's got a couple that are like celestial effervescence. Or what's our one? There's one that we have that procs on our heals while we have Celestial Brew up that only works to vivify in the initial gift of the Ox Heal.
Okay.
Nothing else. Like, and if you're sitting there with Celestial Brew up vivifying yourself, you got bigger problems.
It's a solo thing. It's a solo thing.
No, it's not. Because you've got Celestial Brew up. You don't need to vivify yourself. In solo content, if you have Celestial Brew up, you're literally immortal for the next 10 seconds.
Oh man, that's pretty good. Okay, any other gear or like we'll talk a little bit about gear here in a minute. I guess we can sort of talk about this, but we'll sort of transition, I think, to the mega dungeon topic now, because it's the other areas I wanted to talk about a little bit. A little bit more wide open here, but talking about gear, we'll hit that one first. Do you think there will be a broken trinket or piece of gear out of the mega dungeon that you must have? Yes. Yeah. I was also there too.
It may not be a trinket. It may be something like the Fire Mage bracers that came from Mechagon.
Yep.
Would not be surprised to see items like that come from the Mega Dungeon. That seems like a very interesting way for them to do loot. I like it. I actually really like a lot of the Mechagon items. A lot of them are very underrated, and they just completely whiffed on the power level of those fucking bracers.
That's so good.
It's like, if you've ever looked at like Magic the Gathering, it's very interesting to look back at some old stuff, because you look at like an old set and you look at it and go like, okay, a lot of these like actually kind of suck. There's a lot of low powered stuff here, but there's a lot of interesting stuff, a lot of the cool stuff. And there's this one random card where it's like, oh yeah, they completely missed on the power level of that and banned in every format.
Yeah. They made that one crazy.
That's the bracer. And that's, I think that's good.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Just no more of those, that dumb trinket that I had to wear on Azara to do damage. Dumb. The font? What? Font. No, not the font. It was the one from Mechagon, the unstable, whatever device, the damage thing I had to use on ads on Azara.
Oh, right. PCI.
Whatever it was called.
Yeah. Cyclotronic Blast.
Yeah. Which was awesome when like,
I still have that in my bags. It's actually like my number four trinket right now.
Oh my, so dumb, dude. I hated wearing it as a healer because like I'd always forget it for the first like five or six pulls of like when we were doing progression. And then like somebody be like, why is he not dying in time? Healers? And I would be like, shit. Because I knew it was me. So yeah. Yeah, but there'll definitely be some sort of like, you're right, some sort of, we'll call it a broken item, but it'll be an item that there will be an item for pretty much every class you want to get or every spec you want to get. I
had forgotten how dumb Cyclo was.
Yeah. Yeah. I literally dropped a throughput trinket.
I came from Mecha. I wore that thing for two whole patches. It was just like a part of my character.
Yep. So,
You know, that was part of Cyclo, is that the blue card that like made you swim faster didn't work in Eternal Palace.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so good. Like the one place you'd want it to work. That's hilarious.
Did not work. So good. Not even out of combat in the like swimming parts out of combat.
That's so funny. Oh, man. So definitely a broken item out of here. Do you think they'll do a hard mode?
Oh, yeah.
Have they talked about, I don't know. To be fair, I did not watch BlizzCon on this, so they might have said that.
Remember.
Yeah.
But I think the hard mode of Mechagon was honestly a huge success. It was super fun to do. We did it with guildies the first week. I don't think we'll see another like no deaths. I don't think there's going to be a Hertz Locker kind of thing where you did it on hard mode without dying.
Yeah.
Because that is something where while I think it was interesting and difficult, it was also very frustrating and led to a lot of bad feels.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, you just have someone die to some random bullshit. Like maybe someone DCs in the middle of a trash pack and now your 40-minute hard mode run is just completely trashed.
Oh, you never did Trial of the Grand Crusader or Nax 40, or sorry, Nax 25.
You notice how there's a 10-year gap?
For the Immortal runs.
Hertz Locker?
Oh, dude, those... I remember getting like the no death stuff in Nax 25 for like the Immortal. I think that's where that comes from. That's where the Immortal title, I believe, comes from.
No idea.
It's one of those. But yeah, Wrath was the king of not having no dying runs. So good. Those are fun. It was really awesome when you were the one person to die. And then instead of just four other people being upset with you, there was 20 or 19 or 24 other people, right? Whatever it was, the point.
Yeah, 24.
It was great.
Win rating at that time.
It was awesome.
Awesome.
No, it wasn't. It was terrible. So yeah. So no, I could get down with the no dying. I definitely think there's gonna be a hard mode. It'll be. I wonder though if it'll end up being triggered. I wonder if this is the one where they go back and it's like, click the button like the old deer style or sorry, old war style hard modes. Where like you trigger them, which would be cool.
See, how did you trigger it here? You just did it. You did the one that the bot was over. Is that?
Yeah, you did the one that the boss flew over. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't trigger it. You basically just followed it around. I don't think they'll do something similar that way. Hopefully this one's more of like you get to like click something or like activate something.
Those bots were really annoying.
Yeah, it was awful. Like, I remember doing like Mythic Plus and going to the wrong boss in that instance and be like, what is going on here? Like, why are there so many bots here? Yeah. So definitely it should be fun. It seemed like a fun instance, like the whole like Time Lord pirate dragon thing seemed really cool.
So the last time we had timey-wimey dungeon instances was Cataclysm, right?
It was when we went back in time to different points to do things. I don't remember what. There was some lore stuff going on.
Yeah, but there was some War of the Ancients stuff going on. There is the one where we kill... What's the Infinite Dragonflight guy?
No, Nazdormer? No, that's the Time Dragon. That's
the Bronze Dragonflight guy. I mean, we killed Nazdormu's Infinite Dragonflight form, I guess, I think is what happened. But timey-wimey things, so that hasn't happened yet.
Get to click the hourglass to rewind it.
Yep, that was fun. That hourglass was fucking cool.
It was definitely cool. Yeah, at level was fun.
Yeah. Like, going in there and getting to that boss and just being like, okay, we get to spend this entire fight in our cooldowns.
Yeah.
Like, that was fun.
That was a good time.
See any, like, huge departures? Like, very few bosses have that level of departure from, like, a typical, like, you hit your cooldowns, you do your damage, you play your spec.
Yeah.
Back up. Do you think we're going to see any huge departures like that?
No. Now, I don't think, like, I feel like Blizzard nowadays saves things like that for smaller raid tiers to test stuff like that.
Okay.
Versus doing it in dungeons. Because I think the problem nowadays is they have to think about these dungeons as not just 5-man dungeons on their own, but as Mythic plus 5-man dungeons.
Yeah.
So, like,
if it's the last boss,
it's not even the trash thing. I think it's just like the idea that like these mechanics just
are so dramatically different.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the problem, and they feel like they don't want to do too much crazy stuff with it now that they have Mythic Plus as like a viable thing. So it's very much like a
man. Okay, so of the two mega dungeons that we've had recently, so we've gotten one per expansion. We got Karazhan in Legion. We got Mechagon in BFA. And I would say Karazhan was a bit more of like, I don't know if old school is the right word. Maybe it's just me being nostalgic for old Karazhan.
Yeah.
But Mechagon felt like it was more clearly like, this is a Mythic Plus dungeon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Karazhan had more stuff, like it had the optional boss encounters and it had other cool things to just like find. Which is not to say the Mechagon dungeon was totally devoid of those, but it was not nearly as much.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, where do you think this one's going to fall? Is it going to fall?
I think it's going to be much more Mechagon-y than Karazhan-y in that regard.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I just don't think the current set of like the way that they design things today is around that sort of exploration, like putting optional bosses in just to do optional bosses. So I think that's the crux of the issue. So yeah. It's just different. So any other dungeon fun things?
I am honestly looking forward to that because I really enjoyed Mechagon and I really yeah. enjoyed Karazhan. Like Karazhan in High Keys, Maiden of Virtue. But Karazhan in not High Keys was a lot of fun. Karazhan just doing it when it came out was loads of fun.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, like I said, I think Mechagon, even though Mechagon was pretty like prescriptive, I enjoyed doing Mechagon, both in Mythic Plus and just doing the dungeon in general. So yeah. kind of running around it. So the bots were cool in like the outside area. So it had some fun, interesting things. So, all right. So now I think into the meat of the episode, or maybe this one might be even the quickest part of the episode, but class changes.
Yeah.
Any predictions? Like, do you think, I guess...
10th year Covenant ability remade for monks. That's my number one prediction.
Fenthyr remade. Okay. Whew, sorry, I'm writing this down. So
it's not going to be buffed. It's going to get completely revamped.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That's an interesting take. I don't know if I agree. I don't think I agree. And the reason why is I hate to say this, and this is going to sound super cynical, but I don't think Blizzard will put that sort of effort into the monk class. Like, I don't think they'll do it. I think the best that we can hope for, and this is probably going to be what I look at across the board with this, is going to be like numbers tuning. Like, that's, I don't think we end up, I'm sorry.
Sad, but true.
Yeah, I don't. So speaking of like Venthyr remake, that's a really hopeful thing. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think if anything, we'll get like a tuning on, like potentially for those spawns become set for your class, right? Where like
no more random.
And no more random, or like if it is random, it's like how 9 spawn, right? I don't even know. Is it 9? Whatever the number is, like 7 are always of a type you care about, and 2, or maybe that they just said it. It's like 7 are always a type you care about, 1 is of one opposite spec, and the other is of another opposite spec.
Like the Brewmaster one, just give us 7 Windwalkers.
No, they're gonna give 7 Brewmaster Bros to just taunt random things. It'll be great. Actually, do they even taunt? Like, what are the, actually, that's a good point. What do the Brewmaster ones do?
Breath of Fire.
No, really?
I'm pretty sure they Breath of Fire.
I mean, to be fair, at least the Mistier ones heal with Enveloping Mist, which is like, at least they heal. But
I'm pulling it up. Oh, what's it even called? Fallen Order?
Yes, Fallen Order, yeah.
Breath of Fire. I had it right.
That's crazy. That's
Breath of Fire. Breath of Fire, the ability. It's a dot.
That's so great.
So little damage.
That's so funny. Sorry. Yeah, that's hilarious. No, I don't. I mean, a remake would be hopeful. I just don't. I just don't think they put the time in. I just don't think they do it.
Okay.
I think, to be fair, Venthyr would be, if we're speaking about covenants that I would expect them to make changes to, Venthyr is probably the only one that I do. I think the remainder of the covenants from Monk are in general even and fine.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, I don't think they need to touch Kyrian. I don't think they need to touch Night Fae or what's it, Necro? I literally don't play this game anymore. I don't remember. But yeah, I think Venthyr, if they're going to touch, like, make changes to anyone, it's going to be that one. And I think that one is just a numbers from my perspective. But if they do make a remake of it, that would be cool.
Yeah.
I just don't. I don't know.
I mean, I don't think there is. I mean, obviously, there's a numbers thing that they could do to make it, like, somewhat usable. They could buff all of the spawns out the ass. They could make them all cast Fist of Fury.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's basically a bad Ashen Hollow, but bad Ashen Hollow is still pretty useful.
Pretty good. That's pretty good. So,
maybe, but I think you do have a point there.
Yeah, I just don't see them doing a rework, which is like, which feeds into like from a class perspective, at least for our spec perspective, at least for like Mistweaver, like I don't. Anything like, I don't expect anything more than adjustments to existing spells, right? Like, whether that's spell power increases or mana cost changes, right? Like, I doubt
your healing spheres.
I just said, God, fuck. All right, here we go. I am going to go out on a limb here and say, we will never, and we'll quote this for the rest of the time, we will never get healing spheres as a spec ever.
That's the episode title now, right? We will never get healing spheres. So it's searchable. So if everybody if ever anyone searches for Mistweaver healing spheres, is going to pull up this episode of this podcast from now until the end of time.
I'm fine with that because we're never getting the ability. The ability was trash when it was our mastery, and it's trash today. Like, it's just, it's bad. I think for like class changes, right? Like, at least for Mistweaver, like, I don't foresee a rework of any stretch of the imagination, because I think the rework that, and the only reason I say that is twofold. Number one, again, I don't think this is a patch where Blizzard does that for this class. And the second thing is that any rework I want is really, I feel like it's an expansion level type rework. Like, it's needs that time.
Mistweaver needs it. Mistweaver has needed an expansion level rework since they got an expansion level rework in Legion.
Yeah, which was awful. That was bad. But yeah, I think here we see numbers adjustments. We probably see some additional mana cost reductions on certain spells. I'll go and say that. And probably some adjustments in terms of like spell power coefficients. Maybe a like REM sort of update in terms of like maybe its cooldown starts to be affected by haste. That might be the craziest thing you see.
Oh man. Imagine Blackout Kick affected by haste. Ooh.
Wait, isn't it?
It's not for Brewmaster.
Oh, for Brewmaster. That would be interesting. He would just cast it all the time, right?
No, I mean, it's our number one ability in the priority list.
Yeah, so what else would you hit?
I mean, just right now it has like really awkward things that it does because it doesn't scale with haste, but Keg Smash and Rushing Jade Wind do.
Oh, so you get like weird timings.
Yeah, like really awkward timings because they don't line up. You end up with like a 7.4 second cooldown on Keg Smash and like a 6.9 second cooldown on Rushing Jade Wind, and you end up with like, because you have any haste at all, they clash with the cooldown of Blackout Kick.
Gotcha. That's funny. Yeah, I guess haste for that would be interesting, but any other changes you would see for Brews maybe potentially?
Question. Actually, before I get to that, do you think that they need to do huge systems changes like they needed to do in BFA?
System level changes.
Failure, they needed to do huge just systems change. Well, I mean, they needed to just get rid of Azurite and make the classes good. That's what they needed to do. They refused, but that's what they needed to do. Do you think they need to do that? I just wanted to
see. Yeah, no, that. I think largely.
So, like, enhancement or elemental, one of the two was promised a rework in like 8.1.
Yeah.
Never materialized. And some of that was because they had to just remake systems. Like, they had to keep adding bullshit on top. And without the need to do that, I actually think it might open up more room for them to make larger changes to the classes.
Yeah, but so, and here's where like I think potentially like COVID comes into play in terms of like just the slowness in them doing work, right? Like
I think COVID's a cop out at this point.
Potentially. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I would say
it's not like awful saying that. It's not like there's definitely, I think like the increased stress levels and everything definitely like that slows down work. Like totally 100% that slows down work. But like the work from home thing, they've been doing it for over a year now.
Yeah, that's true.
Get your systems together in a year, what are you even doing?
Yeah, and I guess this would have been that they would have started 9.1 post them moving home. Because like the disruption, like it's more of a disruption in how you work versus like the fact that you're working from home or that like the stress, I think, is whatever. Like, not, well, that sounds really bad. Not that it's whatever, but yeah, I think it's now a known quantity of what COVID is. So it's not like you're not stressing about, oh my gosh, what could it be? Like, what is it? You know, it's a known thing. So I think that stress is at least diminished, right? But yeah, I guess you're right. Like 9.1, this would have been the first full thing they did while at home. All right, fair. I just don't, systems wise, I think they're fine. Maybe some tweaks, like Torghast is fine. Like Azura, or sorry, Covenants end up being fine. Conduits end up being fine as systems, right? They're not broken. They're not just stupid and dumb and should be thrown out the window, right? Because I think they serve a purpose. So yeah, maybe we see large class reworks. I just don't think we get that for monks, like at least for Mistweaver, right? Like, I don't know, like Brewmaster and Windwalker.
The one I see it most likely for is Mistweaver, because Mistweaver is a joke.
Yeah, it's a community joke.
Mistweaver is the butt of the joke.
So this is one of the biggest things I hate. Not that I hate, but that I have struggles with, because like in Discord, I hate being the type of person, and I hate when our Discord gets like this, where it's just negative, where it's like literally like trash spec, trash, they're terrible, there's nothing redeeming about them, blah, 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 which there's a part of me that agrees every time someone comes into the Discord and says that, right? There's a part of me that's like, yep, I'm literally there with you, I will do this. But then the other part of me is like, the class isn't that bad, it just is not fun to play. And like, to me, that's the bigger issue. Like, I swapped to Holy Paladin. Like, if Mistweaver gets minor changes, like, I'm not swapping back, because to be fair, Holy Paladin's fun. Like, the gameplay of like Holy Power and Crusader Strike, and a lot of people hate that are traditional Holy Paladins. I love it. But like, that gameplay loop is fun to me. So if Mistweaver doesn't have that, I'll play the class that I find fun. And I think you're right. Like, I think Mistweaver, like this whole like doom and gloom thing, isn't that, to me, the doom and gloom isn't that we're underpowered or we can't complete the content. It's just like, doom and gloom to me is that it's not fun. And so like, when someone,
it's like, it's badly designed on multiple, like there's not a mechanical reason to bring Mistweavers. Yeah. There's not really a fun reason to bring Mistweavers.
No. There's just,
like, however, whatever way you slice it, there's not really a reason to bring Mistweavers.
Yeah, which is evidenced by, like, I mean, the biggest thing that I find hilarious is like the Mythic Sire kills. So the parses on Warcraft logs, it's absolutely hilarious when you read them, because it's like,
do you have updated numbers on that? I'm actually gonna pull it up.
I don't. About 3 weeks ago, when I looked, right after 9.0.5 dropped, I looked and there was 250 Mistweaver kills for the final four bosses. Right? There was like 1,700 Mythic Sire and Athreus kills for Shaman alone.
This is number of parses, not number of kills.
Yeah, so parses, which will be multiple over a couple weeks.
There are 2,172 Rest of Shaman Parses, 1,600 Holy Paladin Parses, 1,300 Disc Priest Parses, 200 Rest of Druid Parses. About a cliff.
But is Mistweaver over 50 yet?
No. Holy Priest is now over 50 at 56.
Mistweaver's at like 48.
Bug with Neutralize. I tell you, that's the big thing. And then Mistweaver, 45.
It got one more since I looked a week ago.
It might break 50 before 9.1.
Which is like, and that's literally, like, that's not, to me,
this isn't even unique. Like, this is, like, the same person can have multiple parses.
It could literally be, what are we, since 9.05, 4 weeks out, right? There could only be 10 Mistweavers in the world killing Mythic, that are at least public logging, that are killing Mythic Sardinathris, right? Like, and no matter where you slice it, like, that can't feel good to Blizzard. Like,
yeah.
To me, like, and then again, that's at the highest level, the top level, right? But the idea is, like, there needs to be some sort of that. And, like, you'll see that cliff. Like, the funny thing is, you will see the cliff if you look at each boss, because, like, literally everything up till Council, you can equate to like us having a smaller population of players that play the class, right? Like,
yeah,
that's fine. We're never gonna hit Holy Paladin or Shaman or even Disc Priest numbers of parses, whatever. We're always gonna be lower, but we're gonna be like a proportion lower. As soon as you hit Council, it's like low, and then you hit Sludge Fist, it's even worse, and then you hit like Stone Legion and Sire, of course. Like, it's a literal cliff, like you said. So I don't know what they're gonna do. Like, I think Mistweaver deserves a huge rework. I just think the rework that I would want them to give is like an inclusion of Chi. It's a rework of the entire class. And I don't think they've done something like this in a while.
That's like number two on my wish list. And number one is take Celestial Brew off the GCD.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us Chi. Like, it's so funny they give it to Holy Paladins and not a class. Like,
I was talking with people in Guild about this on Friday. Holy Paladin right now, the Glimmer build of Holy Paladin is just Mistweaver. It's just Mistweaver. Glimmer of Light, Renewing Mist. Okay, slightly stretching it there. But Holy Power, Chi, they literally are 1 to 5 resources that you stack up by hitting things.
Yep.
They're the same thing.
It's ridiculous. That's why I'm having so much fun.
And it's like, it's this is Holy Paladin Glimmer style healing is just fist weaving. It's just fist weaving.
Literally ridiculous. It's ridiculous how close they are.
Way back when they were talking about how Mistweavers would have mana instead of energy, like the other two monk specs.
Yeah.
And they commented that they didn't want to have to balance a healer that basically didn't have mana, that didn't have mana concerns. Meanwhile, these days, Glimmerden.
Holy Paladin.
It's just, yeah, okay. I enough about Mistweaver problems.
But I will go on record and say we will not be getting a rework. I think it'll be just minor updates.
Yeah. I think Mistweaver needs more than a rework if that's the rework can do. Do you think so? If I had, you know, a day to dedicate to fixing Mistweavers, what I would do is I would change Revival. Do you think we will see any changes to Revival?
No.
Okay.
No. Because I think, like I said, I think there is whatever reason. Individuals like it's very weird with healers in that like in general healers don't get new things, right? Like Spirit Link has been Spirit Link since they added it, like Aura Mastery has been Aura Mastery since Paladins or you know whatever, and I think it's weird to me, but they seem to with healers have they give them an identity. And they stick to that, right? I mean,
healers' major cooldown is in large part their identity.
Yeah, yeah. For right, wrong, or different.
Fundamentally, like if you changed Revival, you could have a significant impact on Mistweaver identity without having to rework the whole class. Like it wouldn't be an expansion level rework to address all the problems they have, but it might make them more palatable. Do you think we'll see any changes to Revival? I mean, you already said no.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, what I would like to, I don't think we'll see changes, but what would be interesting to me would be to bring back the Legion artifact trait where Revival put a hot on you after it hit. What's up?
I didn't know it didn't do that anymore.
Yeah, no, it doesn't do that anymore. It's just a single hit. But yeah, I think you bring back that, maybe give that slightly more power than it was back then.
Okay.
But yeah. We have a conduit that does that, Abbe? No. I guess we do have a conduit that does it. Nobody runs that though. But make that baseline. Get rid of that fucking conduit. And make that baseline. Cause I think that's what it needs. And well, not that that's what it needs, but that's like a minor change that they could incorporate into the spell, make it a little bit more powerful. Don't do any of this stupid stagger BS, like the raid stagger thing. Like, it's dumb.
That's Brewmaster's
department. Come on. Well, right. Like, and yeah. I don't know, man. Just bring back Chi. Like,
I mean, honestly, if Mistweavers are handing out like alcoholic tea, we have problems.
Exactly. Exactly. So.
As far as Brewmasters go, the only changes I expect to see are actually just like tank level changes. I expect to see more in the vein of the 10% DR buff that all tanks got recently. Yeah. I expect to see more of that. Like just like I expect them to see them just like tanks are more powerful now. That's what I expect to see.
Because
they gave us the 10%, I want more. Like just straight up, it's not good enough. And I don't want it to be like, oh, you can never satisfy, but tanks are way far down the totem pole and a little 10% DR buff is not fixing that.
And it might
like for Blood DK, it actually I think could, because Blood DK can death strike.
Yeah.
But all of the problems that other tanks have do not get death striked away.
True.
So I expect to see some more tank buffs. And it's not going to be anything like Brewmaster specific. I don't have any Brewmaster specific predictions. I'm not going to predict that they're taking Celestial Brew off the GCD. I want them to, but I have no faith in them being able to make a good decision about the GCD.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair. Yeah, well, it'll be... I mean, for tanks for me, though, like, yeah, I guess the blanket stuff, I think we'll see more of that. Would you want to see a change? Like, would you want to see basically any sort of changes to, like, maybe, because you guys don't, do you guys have Clash? Like, would you want Clash back?
We have Clash. It doesn't work. I used one of the ranged mobs in Castle Nathria last night. You want to know what happened?
What happened?
Nothing.
Huh.
I used it on caster mobs in Castle Nathria. You want to know what happened?
Nothing.
I moved halfway to it. It moved halfway to me, and then it snapped back to its original position, working as intended.
Okay, so it's broken. Interesting.
Yep, exactly like it was a mob.
Okay. Just I'd never have played a Brewmaster with it, so
I don't think they're gonna do anything to Clash. I think most Brewmasters have already resigned themselves to the fact that the ability doesn't work.
Yeah, it's just dead.
And maybe it does something. And if it does the thing you wanted it to, great. If it doesn't, it probably didn't kill you.
Gotcha. Interesting.
And Windwalkers have already gotten more changes than they are going to get for the rest of their lifetime, so.
It's true. Yeah, Windwalkers are, yeah. I mean, it's funny. The big thing I think with Windwalkers is more bug fixes. Like, I think they're just going to fix, they're going to find and fix more bugs than they have ever found or fixed. I guess that's one question for you. Do you think the Windwalker bug fix extravaganza extends into either Mistweaver or Brewmaster? No.
The bug fix extravaganza was actually BFA.
Gotcha.
We had issues that were fixed with Celestial Fortune and with Gift of the Ox. We had an issue at the very beginning of Shadowlands that popped up during Shadowlands beta with how... the hot shrub effect on invoked news that was implemented. But beyond that, like, I'm not actually aware of any like big bugs.
Gotcha.
Clash obviously doesn't work, but
never has. God, if we get healing spheres, man. Ugh.
You're gonna get healing spheres, and you know what? They're not gonna work.
Oh, that even if they worked, they weren't gonna work. Like, it's just I still remember when they put in the fact that like they put in an explode, like if a healing sphere was not picked up in its duration of life, it exploded free healing around it. I still remember they put that in and we're like, this is gonna make everything better. No, like it's still trash. Like it's still a trash ability, even if they explode.
What's your range? Like a yard?
I think it was like 5 yards. It was short too. It was not, I mean. They randomly spawned everywhere, so it was like couldn't even use them anyway. To be fair, they gave us healing spheres this expansion anyway. It's in the Archon trinket from Spires.
What those orbs are, I keep seeing pop up.
Yeah, those blue orbs. You pick them up, you get like I think they heal and give verse or something like that. I don't know.
What are these? I don't have weapons in order up. Because they look like the Pelagos orbs.
They do. Yeah. So they gave it to us in a fucking 5-man trinket. God damn.
Imagine having your entire like this is the thing you're getting back, Mistweavers. Oops, you didn't get it, but also it's on the trinket.
It was just a slap. As soon as I saw that trinket, slap in the face. Cool. All right. I wrote on my desk all of our predictions. Actually, that's what I'm doing. We got a pretty big list here.
Have a like whiteboard desk, right?
I do, yeah. My desk is like the top, it's a whiteboard. So I've been writing down my predictions. I'll take a picture of it. I can send it to you. My computer. Well, I can send it to my phone. What do I care about my computer? But yeah, so I have all of our predictions in my shitty handwriting and we'll check them off the list. I'll probably retype these and put them somewhere.
We're gonna have this image with your beautiful handwriting pulled up on stream next week.
Please God, no. I have to move some work notes. So you don't see those. But yeah, any other big predictions? I love our Anduin prediction. I love it.
It's honestly, I think the one that is the best. That is the best prediction that we've made.
I think it's gonna happen.
I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. It is going to happen.
It'll be interesting.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. This fucking Sylvanas just needs to die. Awesome. All right. So if there's nothing else, I think that's our little patch prediction thing. Like I said, I'll get this typed up. We'll have this for next week in terms of what we think. Maybe we'll just post the image and I'll be lazy. You guys can try to decipher my handwriting. But yeah, I think that about wraps it for this episode. But of course, we're heading to
Q&A,
my favorite time. So as always, you can send your questions in to Emilson or myself, and we will answer most of them on air. We're starting to get a couple weird ones. Maybe I was a little too open by saying we'll answer anything. So just, you know,
limits to that.
Yeah, we found our limits. Shout out to Blazeroo for finding our limits. So this week our question comes from the one, the only Soji, who continues to want to delete SCF. And they ask,
can you blame them?
What's your favorite childhood? excuse me. All right. What's your favorite childhood food? Basically maybe something as a kid, you know, a little bit nostalgic about it. I guess Emilson, do you have a favorite childhood food that brings back sweet, sweet memories?
Like pretty much everything that I ate as a kid, I still eat. So there's not anything really like explicitly tied to my childhood. And it's not like we didn't get stuff like Lucky Charms or any cereals like that. And there wasn't any like we just ate regular food.
The only
thing that comes to mind is actually hot dogs, and that's because I don't really eat hot dogs anymore, and it's just like somewhat a product of my life situation for the past few years, namely that I was in Florida and Florida's fucking hot and I'm not going out in the summer and eating hot dogs in the park in 90 degree human ass weather. It's not happening.
It's beautiful.
But you know, that's the one because, like, as you might have been able to tell, we used to go and, like, it wasn't necessarily in the park, but, like, in the backyard at the neighbors, you know, have a cookout, eat hot dogs. So that might be it.
Yeah. So I actually have two, actually. Okay. So my first one is pancakes. And it's because we used to do every Saturday, not Saturday morning, it was every like Sunday for brunch, or like every other Sunday, we go to my grandparents, and my grandmom would always make pancakes, but would always make them in a shape. And so every week she'd be like, what do you want your pancakes? And we'd be like, we want this or that. And like, it was really fun. I enjoyed the shapes.
Make you a Star Destroyer shaped pancake.
No. So it got to the point when like we would get older, like when me and my cousins were older, when we were like teenagers or whatever, we'd ask my grandma for like really hard things to make because we were a-holes about it. So we'd be like, I'd like the Leaning Tower Pizza, or can you make the Mona Lisa? Like we'd just be idiots about it. But when we were kids, it was fun because it was like Mickey Mouse ears or like a dinosaur. And then like she'd be like, rawr, here comes a dinosaur, and like bring you your plate. There'd be like butter and syrup on it. Anyway, super nostalgic about pancakes. I still love pancakes to this day. But yeah, that's why. Like, I will go any diner I go to. I will literally order pancakes no matter what time of day it is.
Maybe I'm gonna go to the store after this. Maybe I pick up a pancake mix.
Dude, pancakes are good. So pancakes is the first one, and the second one is Hamburger Helper. And Hamburger Helper is, so it's funny to me because like growing up, I ate Hamburger Helper a lot. If you guys don't know what it is, it's sort of like.
I had totally forgotten about that, but I know exactly everything that you're about to say.
Yeah. So Hamburger Helper was like the meal that my dad would cook us, because my dad, like if my mom was out or my mom wasn't cooking dinner, my dad would cook us Hamburger Helper, because it's literally like ground beef in a bowl, you brown it, and then you pour all the packet and noodles and stuff on top of it, and it's one pan, it makes your hamburger helper. But so that's like, it was always like the meal my dad made us. But the funny thing is that when I met my wife, there's this story where she's like, where we ate hamburger helper once at my house, like she came over to eat, and I was like, my dad's cooking dinner, so we're having hamburger helper. It's a joke. He always makes it. I was like, older at the time, but it was still funny. Anyway, she was like, I hate hamburger helper. I'm like, first of all, who hates hamburger helper? And second of all, why? So she tells the story about like, she's like, we used to eat it all the time. It was like, we ate it forever. Like, we have to make it, all this stuff. And I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. The funny thing is, years later, I find out the reason she hates it was because one week she had to spend at her parents. They have a house at the Jersey Shore, at her house at the Jersey Shore, which is her and her cousins. And they had to make their own dinners, and it was hamburger helper. So she literally had hamburger helper for a week, not even, for maybe like three meals. And like, she like hates it. I'm like, you are literally overreacting about nothing. So that's my hamburger helper.
It's actually like super bland.
That's the other thing. It's like, it tastes like literally ground beef. There's literally 30 flavors of hamburger helper. They all taste the same. Like, I would agree.
Like, I had some, like, I understand 100% that story about dad's cooking.
Yeah.
Like, and like, my mom cooked it from time to time when it was just like too much stuff happening, not enough time to actually make food. And like, it has a place. It's definitely like, it's sure as hell better than nothing.
Yeah.
But it's very, very bland. And I did not remember that until I had some as an adult. And I was like, holy shit.
Beef stroganoff.
Like ground beef with noodles on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this isn't even like shitty packaged ramen flavor packet kind of stuff.
No.
It's just ground beef.
That's good. That's hilarious. But yeah, I would say that pancakes are probably my favorite food for my kid. I still love pancakes to this day. Like, oh my God. I just want butter. So now,
on that note, I had waffles. Similar note, and I don't have them just because I don't have a waffle iron. So like, it's kind of hard to make waffles without a waffle iron.
It is.
But it's not like I don't have them anymore, because like, Christmas 2 years ago, mom made a huge batch of waffles, and she made like raspberry waffles and chocolate chip waffles. And then plain waffles and almond waffles, like loads of waffles.
That's awesome, dude. So the funny thing is, we never had a waffle iron growing up. So I never got to, like, our thing was always pancakes. Like, yeah. Pancakes and sort of like pancakes and scrapple were big. I don't know if you have you ever had scrapple.
I've never heard of scrapple.
So what? Okay, so scrapple,
Jersey thing.
It is a Jersey thing. It's essentially, so it's gonna sound really, it's basically at a meat packing plant at the end when they don't know what to do with the rest of it. They take the rest of what didn't go in anything else and they package it in like a little log. And like, that's scrapple. Like, it's literally like the leftover everything that's like somewhat still edible. What?
I thought that was hot dogs.
Oh, it's what's left. It's what's left after the hot dogs. It's like bottom of the barrel, but it's like in this, like, it looks like, it almost looks like a loaf of like a if you ever get like mozzarella cheese in like the log, it looks kind of like that, only like a thicker consistency. And you just slice it up. And then you like, you slice it up like pieces of bread, and then you like put in a skillet and like, I don't know, heat it up. If you ever have the chance to eat scrapple, it's super salty. So it's actually not too, like, I don't know. It kind of tastes like meat, but like salty meat. It's like grilled, put on sandwiches. I don't, breakfast sandwiches.
Cool.
It's good. It's scrapple's good.
The fact that it's the stuff that's left over after hot dogs.
Yeah, it's just literally whatever. Like, it's like, they're like, they made everything in the meat packing plant that day. It's somewhat still edible. We'll just sell this to people in Jersey. Like, I think that's how, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, it makes sense why it exists, but also it blows my mind.
It's so good. It's so good. I forget. I think it's called Taylor. Like, if you've had Taylor ham, I think is the other name for it. Like, scrapple is very much like the Jersey name for it. But yeah, Scrabble. It's delicious. Maybe that's my favorite childhood food. I actually just had Scrabble today. But it's my kids love it too. It's crazy. But yeah.
That is very interesting. Oh, I am not hungry anymore.
I might actually go get some. We still have some in the fridge. Let's go put it in the microwave, heat it up.
God damn. Okay, we're going to end this episode now. Thank you all for listening. This has been the 63rd episode of the Peak of Serenity podcast. As always, we appreciate you coming and hanging out in Twitch chat or listening to the audio version. If you enjoy this podcast, you can support us over on our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And you can also, if you don't want to contribute financially or you can't contribute financially, you can come and say hi in Discord. We love it. Come say hi. Come hang out in one of the lounge channels. It is a good time. And Brew Lounge is the best lounge, and don't let Anam tell you otherwise. Anyway,
no.
Thank you all for listening. And we will see you next week with actual 9.1 news and how our predictions were.
I'm so excited for our board.
It's going to be great. All right. Goodbye.
Bye.